Hey, good morning, scholars. Welcome back to the virtual classroom. Today, we are going to go ahead and finish up Maniac McGee. All right. We are reading Maniac McGee by Jerry Spinelli, and we are doing so with permission from Little Brown and Company. So we left off yesterday. Maniac and Mars Bar showed up at the McNabs for the birthday party, and tensions are definitely high. You know, Mars being in that house and the way the McNabs, how they think and their view of the world is vastly different. So, again, things are pretty tense in this situation where we left off. So we're going to go ahead and pick up on page 162. So grab your book, find a good, comfortable spot to relax. And, again, it's time to get lost in a good story. Page 162. Chapter 42. George McNabb was the first to speak up. He was stretched out on the only new piece of furniture in the house, a tilt-back lounge chair. Said McNabb, "What's he doing here?" The awkward silence that followed was mercifully broken by Piper, tugging on Maniac's arm. "Where's my birthday present? What'd you get me?" Maniac pulled the present from his pocket. Piper exclaimed, "A watch!" "No," said Maniac, "a compass. It tells you which direction you're going." "Like to the ocean?" asked Russell. "The ocean, Mexico, anywhere in the world. Only one thing." "What's that?" Maniac took the compass from Piper's hand. "I'm keeping it till school's over. If you go every day, both of you, then you can have it back and sail around the world." "On our raft," Piper cheered. "Is it a deal?" Piper and Russell and Maniac did a three-way high five. "It's a deal." George McNabb pulled himself up from the easy chair and shuffled into the kitchen. He wore bareback slippers over bare feet. His white ankles were dirty. He took a beer from the fridge and headed for the steps. "Let me know when it leaves," he said, and went upstairs. Maniac could feel the voltage that surged through Mars Bar and crackled black lightning from his eyes. Quickly, he clapped his hands. "Hey, isn't this a party? Where's the games?" So they played games, silly games, whose main objective seemed to be shrieking and screaming. Mars Bar allowed himself to be dragged into them, but his jaw was clenched and his eyes kept straying to the gaping hole in the ceiling. And to the cobras, who were slouching against the walls and baseboards, sipping beers and watching his every move. None of them had spoken since Mars and Maniac walked in. Of course, as far as the kids were concerned, the highlight of the whole party was not the birthday boy, Piper McNabb, but the McNabb's new pillbox. They found every excuse to stay inside it. They fought over space at the narrow gunnery slots. When Mars Bar whispered to Maniac, "What is that?" Maniac said it was a bomb shelter. Then Russell called, "Let's play Rebels. Whites in the pillbox, blacks outside." A cheer went up, and a dozen kids stampeded into the pillbox. Their gable circle and cinder block walls had popped from the gunnery slots. "I'm going to be white." "I'm white." "Me too." "Too many in here. We need more blacks. "Not me. Not me." "We ain't got enough guns. Only the ones with the guns are in. The rest of you, get out. You're black." "Give me a gun." "I had it first." "Come on, you meatballs. Blacks is the best part. You get to charge." "Yeah, we get to lose. Look, you can use beer cans for grenades. You can lob grenades." "Then you do it." "Well, somebody got to be black, else we ain't playing. I'm counting. Time I hit 10, I want to see 5 of you out there." "1. Russell counted. No one came out. Not at 9. Not at 10. Not after 10. Maniac and Mars Bar stared in silence at the gunnery slots, where wide-open eyes began to appear, one pair atop another. The three words that Mars Bar sneered, the joke that he spat out, yeah, bomb shelter, did not even have the moment to themselves. For just then, another word, Geronimo, came plunging from the sky and landed with a floor-jarring, heart-stopping crash directly behind him. A cobra had jumped from the hole, a fat, red-haired cobra, who was now rolling on the floor and laughing so hard, as were all the cobras, that his face matched the color of his hair. "You see him? You see him jump? I never see his face? Somebody check out his pants. Check out his jaws. Oh, man. Oh, oh." Maniac had to wrap Marsbar in a bear hug to keep him from charging the fat red brawler. The laughter stopped as it cut. The laughter stopped as if cut by scissors. The cobras were standing. John McNabb sauntered forward. "You got a problem, Sonny?" "That wasn't funny, John," said Maniac. "He could have been hurt." McNabb kept his eyes on Marsbar. "I ain't talking to you, McGee. I'm talking to Sonny here. Don't you like our party, Sonny boy?" Marsbar strained against Maniac's arms. "You ain't got to worry about me coming to no more of your parties, Fishbelly. And you ain't got to worry about me invading this piss hole. Anybody come a block away, they faint from the smell." McNabb advanced. Maniac shouted, "John, you owe me one. I brought the boys back." McNabb took another step, then stayed. The cobra stayed, and Maniac, clamping the struggling Marsbar for dear life, lugged him down the gauntlet, a gauntlet of seething eyes, to the door and the street. Marsbar wrenched free and stomped on ahead. Maniac followed. It was almost dark. High above, the streetlights were buzzing on, one by one. After several blocks, Marsbar wheeled. "You suckered me. You softened me up with them pick people, then bring me here. What'd you think? I was going to cry? Okay, I come over. I did it. It's done. And don't you be coming around no more. You hear me, Fish? Because you ain't only seen me half bad yet." He turned and headed due east. Maniac walked another way. It was a good question. What had he thought? What had he expected? A miracle? Well, come to think of it, maybe one had happened. While he was looking for one miracle, maybe another had snuck up on him. It happened as he was clamping and lugging Marsbar down the gauntlet of cobras, trying to keep him alive. And what was Marsbar doing? Fighting him. Maniac, straining to get loose and bust some cobras. Outnumbered, outweighed, but not outhearted. That's when Maniac felt it. Pride. Pride for his East End warrior, whom Maniac could feel trembling in his arms, scared as any normal kid would be, but not showing it to them. "Yeah, you're bad, all right, Marsbar. You're more than bad. You're good." Maniac stopped. He had been walking in circles. It was dark. He turned one way, then another, for the briefest moment thinking to go home. Thinking, it's time to go home now. Then remembering that once again, he had no home to go to. Chapter 43. He slept in the park that night, and for the next dozen or so. Sometimes in the buffalo shed, other times the bandshell benches or the pavilion. The nights were warm now. June was on the way. He ate when and where he could. For apples and carrots and day-old hamburger buns, you couldn't beat the deer and buffalo pens. A new Acme had opened, and the bakery sections always had a tray of free samples sitting on the counter. And then there was always the Pickwells. It may have been an illusion, but it seemed that the hungrier he got, the further Mrs. Pickwell's whistle traveled. Some dinner times, there was hardly a spot in town from which he could not hear it. He read it. He read in the library. He joined pickup games in the park, baseball, basketball. School was letting out. There were more kids. Mornings were the best. He would rise with the sun's color, before the sun itself, before the bison, and set out. He came to think of these apple-skinned hours as his special time with the town. There was not a street or alleyway or house or store, not even a garage that he did not recognize. His footsteps fell everywhere but on the bridge over the Schuylkill. His eyes everywhere but on the P&W trolley trestle. And the people, most of them, he did not know by name or face, yet they revealed themselves to him even as they slept. He knew them by their windows and cars and porches and toys they left outside. But most of all, he knew them by their backyards. Flowers, weeds, junk, pet houses, tree houses, vegetable gardens, rubber tires, grass ranging from desert sparse to shaggy to trim as a Marine's haircut. The backyards were as different, as individual as faces. East End and West End, black and white, would begin only when the alarm clocks rang. For now, before sunrise, there was no divisions, no barriers. There were only the people, the families, the town. His town. As much his town as anyone's. He knew he could be sleeping right then, in the Bills' house, or the Pickwells, or even the McNabs. But beyond that, for a few enchanted moments each newborn morning, he believed there was not a single home in Two Mills, not a single one, that would not happily welcome him to enter and to go upstairs and curl up between its sleepers. Maybe that's why he left the Banshell bench late one night in mid-June and went to someone's backyard on Hamilton Street, someone whose leaf lettuce he had watched growing, and quietly opened the gate and closed it behind him, and laid himself down on a white wicker love seat on the back porch. From then on, he slept in a different backyard or back porch every night. Once, finding the back door unlocked, he slept in a kitchen. Chapter 44. One morning in early July, cruising around the Appleskin Hour, Maniac thought he heard footsteps other than his own. He stopped. Only the vast quietness responded. It happened a few more times. Must be his own footfalls echoing down the row house canyons. 2 days later, passing an alley, he thought something moved at the other end. And once, turning onto a broad street, he had the feeling, more sense than sight, that something had just flashed around a corner 2 blocks away. When these odd sensations continued for another morning or two, Maniac knew he was not alone. So he was not totally surprised when, a few mornings later, he turned a corner and ran smack into another early hour cruiser. No, it wasn't the what that surprised him. It was the who. Mars Bar Thompson. They quickly bounced off each other and went their separate ways. Neither paused. Neither said a word. This was the first in a series of apparently random mergings, intersections, alleyways. One never knew when he would come upon the other. Sometimes they found themselves running the same route, only a block apart. On one occasion, they trotted down the same street at the same time in the same direction, but on opposite sides of the street. And then one day, as it happened, they each turned a particular corner at the same moment and headed off in the same direction, side by side. Still neither spoke. Not even their eyes met. They jogged silently for a block, then veered apart. The next time they dovetailed, they stayed that way for 2 blocks, then 3 blocks, and so on. No words, no looks, just the rhythmic slapping of their sneaker soles upon the sidewalk and the pulsing duet of their breathings, stride for stride, shoulder to shoulder, breath for breath, till they were matching on all points. A harnessed pair, 2 runners become one. Morning after morning it happened this way, the two of them dovetailing at an intersection and without the slightest hitch in stride, cruising off together. Though each face showed no awareness of the other, they were in fact minutely sensitive to each other. If Mars Bar cranked up the pace just a notch, Maniac would pick it up within a stride. If Maniac inched ahead, Mars Bar was there. If one veered to the left or right, the other followed like a shadow. One day, one was the leader. The next day, the other. One day, Mars Bar would lead Maniac down the river down the tracks, past the railroad gondolas, each with its mountain of coal, to the rolling mill at the steel plant where his father worked. Another day, Maniac would head for the townships to the north and west, the farmlands of the country, where dew sparkled on spider webs, and nature was doing such fresh and wonderful things that you could almost hear the long, neat congregations of corn clapping, amen and amen. When the working people began leaving their houses, the daybreak boys diverged, Mars Bar to the east end, Maniac to wherever. A week passed, a second week, morning after morning, stride for stride, breath by breath, never a word, never a glance, each believing the other simply happened to be going where he was going. They were cruising Main Street one morning, passing the Grand Movie Theater, when Piper McNabb came screaming down the middle of the empty street. He was wide-eyed and crying and soaking wet. His feet were slathered in coal-black mud. He shrieked and babbled at them, but he made no sense, so they just followed as he raced frantically back up the street. As they ran, the belch-like toot of a whistle grew louder and louder. He led them to the corner of Main and Swede, to where the platform of the P&W Charlie Terminal hung high above the sidewalk. He burst onto the terminal building and up the steps. In a moment, Maniac and Mars Bar were on the platform, gasping and following Piper's pointing figure down the tracks. What they saw pulled the fragments of Piper's babble together. The boys had been playing Bombs Away. Piper's part was to sail a raft down the river. Russell's part was to wait on the trolley trestle that spanned the river, and when Piper passed underneath, bomb away from a bucket full of rocks. Everything went as planned, unless you count Russell's failing to sink the raft and Piper's practically drowning trying to beach it, until Piper returned to the terminal to find Russell still out on the trestle. Apparently, without a target below to focus on, Russell had suddenly discovered how high he was. One false step, and he could slip right between the ties to the river. And that's where Russell was now, out in the middle of the trestle, high over the water, frozen in terror. Not even a railing to cling to, responding neither to Piper's cries nor to the red and yellow P&W trolley, which also occupied the trestle, idling and tooting about 20 feet away. Piper pulled at Maniac. Save him! Save him! Mars Bar stared with growing astonishment at Maniac, whose wide, unblinking eyes were fixed on the trestle, yet somehow did not seem to register what was there. Nor did he seem to hear Piper pleading. With a drenched, mud-footed kid clawing at him, he turned without a word, without a gesture, and left the platform and went downstairs. Shortly, he appeared on the sidewalk below. He crossed Main and continued walking slowly up Swede, Piper screaming after him from the end of the platform.